Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey friends, have you noticed that no matter how much yoga we do, we may still struggle in our intimate relationships? My husband and I have a great relationship, but we are not relationship coaches. And we know that yoga can and does help, but at a certain point, you need more relational support from a relationship specialist. If you're going through some kind of challenge right now in your relationships, my friend Jason Gaddis at the Relationship School can help. Jason's team will pair you up with a skilled relationship coach, and within 48 hours, you'll be getting private one-on-one support on whatever you're going through relationally. And right now, for my listeners only, Jason is offering half off 1 month of relationship coaching. Head over to relationshipschool.com/Laura to get the deal and watch your relationships improve. Good movement, and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a lit yoga podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter and safer movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Welcome to Friday with Friends. I am so excited to have Dr. Chelsea Jackson Roberts on with me today. Dr. Chelsea has a doctorate, but it's almost like she has a PhD in life. She not only has this background that's rich in teaching, but also in meditation and yoga. And she fuses all these together with some wonderful programs. We talk about her own journey into yoga and how it helped her, and then how she ended up being on the Peloton, amazing platform, and also creating a wonderful yoga literature and art camp at Spelman College, where she synthesizes all of her work, bringing yoga with teens and making connections between literacy development, storytelling, and yoga. Chelsea is currently pregnant, and it was just amazing and wonderful to see her on the screen today with her very close to being born baby, and just the magnetic presence that she has. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Chelsea. Welcome, Chelsea. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, you're expecting, and I'd love to know, when are you expecting your baby boy?
Yeah, well, it's very soon. I just hit my third trimester. So we're here.
Oh my gosh, this is such an exciting time. It kind of becomes surreal. Like it at the beginning, because this is your first pregnancy. And so how has it been for you? Like as this first time around experiencing these changes, and 9 months seems like a long stretch, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just full disclosure, because I've talked about this a little bit, this is my second pregnancy where I've made it this far. My husband and I actually experienced loss at the end of last year, very early on in the pregnancy. However, to make it to the third trimester, to be able to see the ultrasounds, to be able to even see the 3D imaging of his little face is just like a dream come true. And really it is, I say I prepared for this through my yoga practice. It's almost like everything that I've ever learned through the Yoga Sutras, through my asana practice, all of that has met me right now when it comes to practicing patience, when it comes to practicing being easy on myself, being attentive and mothering myself through this process. It has been a tremendous yoga practice for me.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that. And I'm so sorry that you had to endure that early loss. And what a gift now to experience this. And I think that one of the big yoga sutra
ideas of non-attachment really goes into a birthing plan. Mm-hmm. Do you have a birthing plan? And do you have kind of this idea? Because I think I remember when I was pregnant, there was a lot of talk of birthing plan. It was like, I want this, I don't want this. And it was probably more structured than it is now. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, I just want a baby. I want a healthy baby. You know, I'm just going to kind of do my best and participate and hope, you know, I can have an idea of the baby, of mm-hmm. how I want to deliver. Do you find that you are already preparing in that manner, that you just want a healthy baby and in whatever form, in whatever birthing plan it happens?
Absolutely. And I would say the most essential part of the plan has been the partnership that I experience with my husband, Shane, right now. So we've been married for 7 years. We have been partners, not just in a loving relationship, but also in our professional relationship. And so we made a deliberate plan to, you know, take our time to really decide where I was going in this journey of being this yoga teacher who has this far net that is cast to reach so many people. And so I know that this partnership is the most essential part of that birthing plan. And then of course, you know,
I love that. It's so true. But what an important point to bring up, you know?
Yeah. The village that has been supporting us, from my yoga teachers who taught me my first yoga practice, to the team of doctors with whom we're working, to my prenatal yoga teacher. I just went through a prenatal yoga training. And so all of these different people, friends, mothers, parents who are able to share their experiences and who are also yogis, I think that that's the most instrumental part, where you have this perspective of parenting through the lens of yoga. And so that, anything else, I'm just like, again, this is what my yoga practice has been for, to prepare for what the unexpected.
I love that, Chelsea. So can you walk us back, for those who might not know, like, how did you first discover yoga? How are you introduced to it? And what was your background that even led you? I think that all of us have some kind of inquiry or curiosity that sparks that interest in going down the path of yoga, unless it's completely just a lovely accident. But what was your story with that?
Yeah. So when I was in college, actually, I remember I love to tell the story that I was a park ranger at Carlsbad Caverns. And
so cool.
I remember it was during a time where social media was not huge. It was during a time where you didn't have as much access. I remember maybe a DVD or a VHS even in this little workout room that we had. And I had this book by Rodney Yee. And I just started to like flip through the pages, and I saw him doing these beautiful postures. And I just tried to like emulate him. And so my understanding of yoga was from a completely physical understanding. And then fast forward to when I graduated from college, after I finished the program, I graduated from Spelman College and went to graduate school at Teachers College Columbia. And I walked into my first yoga class. I chose probably the toughest class to go to, a hot yoga class. I always love to share, I fainted in that class.
Oh, no.
I came back. And so again, it was just this understanding of like, oh, this is a workout. I'm going to sweat. I'm going to burn calories. I'm going to feel good about myself. I'm going to be shiny and glowy like all these other people who I see practice yoga. And then fast forward to my early adulthood, I actually tragically lost one of my best friends. She was my college roommate to gun violence. And I remembered the feeling that I would get when I was in a yoga class before I understood like the depth that it could take me to. And I just remembered this feeling of feeling connected. And it was during a time where I felt so fragmented and disconnected because I experienced this trauma I had never gone through before. And so that's when I found my teacher. And that's when I started to dive deeper into meditation. And so I always tell people to celebrate whatever your journey, whatever your story is, never to be ashamed of it. That's why I love to tell people I was a hot yoga girl who, you know, fainted And I don't think that there's anything to be ashamed of in that. I think that often too many times there's this hierarchy of what yoga is. And, you know, not everybody has access to the sutras of Patanjali or, you know, all of these texts, these sacred texts that are beautiful. But I always love, as even as a teacher, to meet people exactly where they are. And so I celebrate my journey for how I started practicing yoga.
Oh, I love that. And I can feel the warmth and just absolute invitation in your joy that you're just radiating. Now, do you still have, do you blend now your two kind of practices? To me, like, yoga is yoga, and there's different ways we express it and different ways we practice it. And sometimes it's more still and sometimes it's movement, but still all of it, like you said, is allowing us to go into this deeper well of ourselves. And I think especially in grief, having also gone through a tremendous grief, like, I know that my yoga practice is what guided me through it. And was allowed me to really feel it in a deep way that I think is one of the greater forms of healing, is having, I don't want to say the luxury, the ability, but sometimes for some people it is the luxury to actually really feel that so deeply so that you can move through it. Mm-hmm. You have that practice now that is just very much tailored, or very much like, what do I need today?
Absolutely. On a personal level, it's what do I need today? One day it may be yoga nidra. The other day it may be moving through a vinyasa flow over and over again. But the great thing about yoga is that it's a framework, and it teaches us to listen to and be attuned to what our body needs. And so that's what my intention is every time I articulate the practice of yoga to my students. I also meet students in very unique ways when it comes to music. As you, we talked about a little bit that I'm on the Peloton platform that's very heavily based in music. And so one day you may get rock yoga from me, another day you may get gospel yoga, but my primary reason for that is to meet people where they are. And a lot of times, if you feel alienated because of how I felt, like, I'm like, I don't think my body can do that. I don't know. I don't look like those people. But if I hear something that resonates with my background, with my experiences, something that resonates on a level that makes me feel grounded, for me, that is music. And so I love to use music as an invitation to welcome people to the yoga mat.
I love that. I always say in my alternative life, I would be a DJ. I'm the same way. And I think it's because throughout humanity, we have gathered in community around, you know, some source, and it always encompasses music.
Yeah. Because
music is like heartstrings to our soul, you know? And, I'm the same way. I love mixing it up and using different things to, and sometimes people won't recognize it, but they love it anyway. And sometimes, like you said, it's an invitation for people who otherwise might not feel like this is my, you know, kind of practice, mm-hmm. but oh my gosh, that makes me feel more at home. How did you journey from where you started your meditation practice and other forms outside of the hot yoga to where you are today?
Yeah, so I am, you know, a trained teacher. My mom, you know, taught, retired from teaching public school after 35 years, and I followed in her footsteps. I was a child development major. I went into international education, went to educational studies for my PhD. So I'm definitely a teacher at heart. And it was during my experience as a public school teacher with my third graders, actually, that I did my teacher certification. So to have these two experiences happening simultaneously, where if you have any teachers out there who are in the public school system, especially, you know, the demand, you know, the being extended in so many different directions. And I was looking for a place of solace after I would leave the classroom. And so when I started to integrate the things that I was learning in my yoga class into the classroom, well, these 8, 9-year-olds were hungry for it. They wanted more. They wanted to know what it was that made Miss Jackson feel happy when she came in every morning. And so I started, the wheel started turning, and I started to integrate, you know, yoga and how I even taught in the classroom. And that's what led me to really, you know, starting yoga literature and art camp for teen girls at Spelman College initially. And we are, you know, that started as my dissertation. And so I always like to credit my foundation of being a teacher first. And it looks different now because I'm on a platform that's much different than the classroom, but I'm still being a teacher. And so I'm always going to remind myself of those beginnings, especially when I'm meeting folks who are doing yoga for the first time. If I can teach an 8 and 9 year old how to do multiplication by integrating yoga or science lessons, then I feel like adults, we still have that within us. And so oftentimes my adult students appreciate that I come from a level of like, this is a third grade class. And so I bring that part of me into my teaching as well.
I love that. And I think, I mean, Chelsea, we have to like put forth a movement to get, you know, yoga and forms of movement and embodied movement into school systems. I've worked on this with my kids and their schools when they were younger, because not only is it important to understand this vehicle that is moving us through life, and most people don't really know about their body, you know, and that's from a physical therapist, that's really where I come in, and I'm educating about, probably I try and get into a third grade level because I don't want to make it complicated. It doesn't right. have to be. Like, it's just understanding the importance of posture and movement mechanics. But I think, wow, if we actually infuse this learning in our school system, like how to regulate your nervous system, how, you know, how to move your body, why you should move your body because of how that it will impact your mental and physical and emotional health. I think that we would see a real shift in the way education is done and how kids actually might enjoy school and might enjoy learning even more.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And for the teachers too, like we have have to be able to, oftentimes I remember when I was a school teacher, my, some of the parents would say, how do I get my child to practice yoga every day? And I'm like, well, do you practice yoga every day? Because as you know, as a parent, they are little sponges who are watching us to learn about life. And so I think the more that we as adults lead by example and being kinder to ourselves, even in the self-talk that we have towards ourselves, towards each other in relationships, I think that that's when it will really start to set in for our youth as well.
I'm sure you love them all, but do you have any of the older texts or teachings, like the sutras, for example, that any specific ones that really are like the most important in terms of a pillar for you? Like, this is fundamentally how I want to live. They're all amazing. What always is fascinating to me is, even though these were thousands of years ago, mm-hmm. Patanjali wrote these, they really show the continuity of the human experience, even though our environment is so vastly different today. Mm-hmm. You have one that really helps you in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I really love the piece where Patanjali simply says the yoga begins now. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that is like it. That's the essence of it all. It's just like, you know, you do all the things, at least for myself. I'm like, I got my yoga mat. I got my, you know, water bottle. I got my towel. I got all of this. And I think that there's this preparation to get to this finale of saying, okay, now we start yoga. No, the yoga starts in making an intention to say, I'm going to dedicate this amount of time to myself. I'm going to be kind to myself. I'm going to be present with my breath. So I've always loved the yoga begins now, and pretty much anything that happens in life, I'm sure as soon as I'm giving birth, it's going to be the yoga begins now, you know?
Yes. And I will say, would love to revisit and have a conversation with you in a number of years, but parenting is, to me, like, you don't have to be a parent to fulfill the teachings of yoga or practice them, but they are really summoned as a parent, because you have this child and we all of our histories are with us. And, you know, you see the parents unknowingly place upon their child certain expectations or whatever. Mm-hmm. And actually have a child and have just joy and openness, and this is an individual who may or may not have any similar to me or anything, is actually, I found it really refreshing. Mm-hmm. But you do see that is a struggle sometimes. And just that's where I think my own yoga practice and teachings has really showed up the most. And the kids are such young teachers too. Like, you know, yeah. they teach us. They
absolutely
teach, yeah, patience and listening and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So what is your plan after the baby comes out, baby boy? Are you going to continue with your teaching? Are you taking some time off? And I'd love to know, like, what your vision is down the road for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the yoga begins now. So mm-hmm. it's like, yeah. this is going to be.
That's the hardest question for me. I'm like, I am so present. I can't even plan out. Like,
yeah, this will be the never ending yoga asana practice and meditation. Yeah. And so, you know, the most important thing for me as a parent who's stepping into parenthood, and, you know, people often say mommy to be or parent to be. I'm like, the moment that I found out that there's this living being inside of me, I'm like, I'm parenting. I have to, like, be very conscious of, you know, how much rest I'm getting, like how I'm parenting myself through all of this. And so, you know, I plan to continue to love myself fiercely, you know, like in order to go back to what I mentioned about, you know, he's going to be watching. He's going to watch how I treat myself, even as a woman, as a self-identified woman, as my husband is, we're very different. That was one of the reasons why I chose to partner with him, because I saw parts of Shane that I knew I, you know, longed for my own personality and my own way of understanding the world. And so, you know, the root of that detachment that we just spoke about to me is unconditional love. Mm. And so my plan is to continue to do exactly what I've been doing, if not more, in an expansive way, to demonstrate that I want my son to know that this world is for him to explore, especially in a society. I'm having a young Black male in a society that may tell him otherwise. And so to have Shane and myself to be chosen as his parents is the biggest and best job I could ever hope for. So I want to continue. I want to write about this experience. I want to, you know, continue my yoga practice, looking forward to the nuanced ways that I show up as a yoga teacher and meditation teacher, because my life will have been changed. And so I plan to keep on going.
I cannot echo enough how important it is that you said, like, loving yourself and taking care of yourself, because you are not going to have this, but you're going to be such a model for this. And that is that women still in this, in 2022, women still, we have so, it's so much in our wiring to nurture and to take care of others. And some people in that have taken, you know, put themselves on literally bottom of the list.
Mm-hmm.
That's never been my issue. And I think some of it is, I was raised with three brothers. I was very much part of that mentality that I could be whatever I wanted to be. And it wasn't like I had to get married and find a man. Those words were never, ever echoed in my house. Thank mm-hmm. you. But that is still very much in our culture, even if it had a very, like, a subliminal message. So to be the model of, like, you have to be better for everyone else, you have to take care of yourself first. And mm-hmm. that is selfish. It's that unconditional love you speak of.
Yeah.
And you're able to really, truly, extend that love out without any resentment or whatever that people start to feel even right. when they just give, and they don't take care of themselves as mothers in particular.
Right.
I'm sure there are dads out there that happens too, but I don't, we don't hear about it too often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have any kind of modeling like that as a young girl in terms of like, take care of yourself, you know, that feeling of empowerment?
Absolutely. I often talk about my granny, who is turning 97, or no, she is 97. Her next birthday, she will be 98. And this is a woman who I've seen from, you know, all of my life be someone who was quite independent. And at the same time, I also learned how to remind myself that I don't have to do it all by myself, because even when I go home to visit Granny and I'm like, let me do this for you. And she's just not used to that because she has been so independent. So I think that I've definitely learned a balance in how to be the both and that I often speak about in my yoga classes, so that I don't get to the point where I am, you know, overwhelmed because I've got to show that I can do it all and I'm independent. That's great. But on the other hand, I can also ask and accept help and support when needed. But I always love to lift up Granny. Well,
yeah, and I think having, you don't need a lot, but if you have one really solid person in your life, especially as a young person who has modeled that pillar of strength, it is, you don't forget them. They you carry them with you. And that sounds right. Like Granny did that. She must be so excited to be getting a great grandson.
Absolutely. Oh, it will be her first and only great. Wow. She had two children. And so this will be my parents' first grandchild. So we are all very excited.
I guess. Everybody's going to like almost self-implode in the hospital. let's just talk about Peloton for a moment. I would love to know, like, what has been one of the most surprising, delightful things that you've discovered at being on the Peloton? This is a mega successful online, originally only cycling, and then they brought in all these other elements. What has it been like to be on this platform and offer yoga on it?
Yeah, so I started Peloton at a very unique time. It was at the beginning of the pandemic. It was at the beginning of, you know, the world seeing the murder of George Floyd. It was at a very transitional time in the world. And so I knew that I was going to be at Peloton before this even happened. So it was just like, I was already, you know, knowing that this was my path right now because of their reach. But to have started during a time that was as uniquely ordered as such, and to have the unique skill set that I've had with my education, with my lived experiences, all of those to have been met with this moment. I actually do a breathe-in series with my colleague. Breathe In, Speak Up is the full series, but the breathe-in portion is the yoga and the meditation. And I integrate, you know, issues surrounding social justice, ways in which we can connect as a community, especially when we're coming from different backgrounds. And so I actually did that first meditation before my official premiere class. And talk about the yoga begins now, to go back to the sutras, it was just like, it wasn't a moment of saying, should I do this? Should I not do this? It was a moment of, Chelsea, you have prepared your entire life for this moment. And so I would say, while it wasn't something that I was happy that had to happen, certainly not, but I was very much encouraged that all the decisions that I've made up until this point prepared me to be able to deliver a meditation at a time that was as tough as it was during the pandemic and the murder of George Floyd.
Wow, that just brought the chills. And I was thinking how 2020 was such a horrific year in so many ways.
Yeah.
And to be a Black woman in a yoga is already, you're so underrepresented. Mm-hmm. And then to have, I don't want to say to have to, like to be presented with the opportunity to speak from that experience, not of necessarily, well, you also had the gun violence experience. I mean, you really, you had it all. And, but was the fact that you just said, yeah, you've been prepared for this your whole life. That's very courageous, because that's a very challenging position to be put in, because you have to, like, it's like showing up and having a lot of mixed emotions, a lot of, I'm just sure it must have been not that you had trepidation, but I imagine like the courage that took a lot of courage, but you're right. You had prepared for it.
Yeah. It's the yoga practice. I know for sure. I think about, you know, the first time that I imagine your listeners have ever entered a yoga class or stepped onto their mat. I remember the first time I attempted to do a headstand, and I was deep down inside terrified. I'm like, am I going to break my neck? Am I going to, like, is something awful going to happen? But after practice, after listening, after falling a couple of times, there was just this moment. And I imagine that many of the yogis out there can relate to this moment of just like the breath just coming through you, and you just feel this grounding. And so while on the one hand, I still get nervous to speak, that's been one of my hardest things to publicly speak. On the other hand,
you would know, you're so eloquent, and you're right, with your background and your eloquence and your infectious just smile and open heart. But it's good. It's good for people to realize that, like, you care, you know, you care how you also, you know, speak and how you present yourself. That's why we get nervous.
There was a knowing that came over me that allowed the breath to move through and to get me really anchored and grounded in that moment. Yeah.
Well, that's bravery, because there must have been such emotional exhaustion that also,
oh, absolutely,
you know, just like,
still.
still, right? And to have these tools, and I just hope you can share them with so many people in so many different diverse populations who have that burden of exhaustion and fatigue and hopelessness, you know. And I think that's where, when we realize like the tools can come from within, it doesn't mean that the rest of the world issues are going to go away. But I feel like that it is like handing somebody some major power that they need. Yeah. Yes. Oh, I love that. Well, where can everyone check out more about you besides Peloton? And by the way, can you explain how Peloton does offer these classes, even if you don't have a bike?
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make. Thank you for making that. That's a misconception out there. It's really quite accessible. So you can practice yoga and meditation with me and a team of other yogis. We also offer strength. We also offer, you know, other things that you don't need the hardware. While that's great, I think that is one of the reasons why I even came to Peloton, was because accessibility was key for me. And so, you know, there's a trial period if you ever want to check it out. And outside of Peloton, I live at Chelsea Loves Yoga. That has been my tag name since, you know, about 2011 when I started my blog. Because what you mentioned, I'm quite an anomaly, at least I was. The great thing is that it's changing and growing, but we still have work to do. And so Chelsea Loves Yoga is a space that initially started for me to interview other yogis who didn't typically get elevated in our communities of yoga. And then also I mentioned Yoga Literature and Art Camp, and you can find out more about our organization at redclayyoga.org.
Oh, I love all that. Well, I really... I'm just so impressed with all that you're doing in the world through using your gift of, you know, not only your PhD in teaching, but your PhD in life. Like, you're really, you have that doctorate in life skills and what's important in all the things that you've talked about. You're just going to be an outstanding parent. And I love how you said, you know, pay attention to the partner first. It's really true. It's really true.
We're in this together. That's the plan. That's
exactly. Well, best of luck. You don't need it, but all the joy and love for your baby boy coming out. Oh my gosh, very soon.
And yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, enjoy this last, you know, everybody's going to tell you different things, but you know, take care of yourself. I just remember my first was born in late July, and I just would get in the pool. And I was like, this is the thing that made me feel so good in the heat of the summer. So if you can get in some water.
Yes. We just got out of the water just recently. Oh, so in the ocean, I was floating on my back. And so I said, double water experience for him. So yes.
Exactly. You really feel like you're communing with your baby.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. You're so inspirational. And for everybody out there listening, check out Chelsea Loves Yoga.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And as always, for my listeners, I'm pulling for you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.